Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Guaranty Trust Bank PLC half year 2020 investors and analyst call. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Segun Agbaje. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much, everybody who's come on the call. As is our usual practice, we have put the presentation out on the website. We did that on Friday. We'll go to a straight Q&A. I'm ready to answer the first question, and thank you once again for dialing in.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touch-tone phone or device, a screen on your device. You will hear that there is a confirmation tone that you have joined the queue. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the buttons. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your question, please press star and then two. Our first question is from Muyiwa Oni of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Segun, for taking the time to take questions. I have a few questions. I think the first is, one, trying to get an update on the holdco structure, so timing and what we should be expecting in terms of execution of that and where you are currently in the process. Secondly, I see you've maintained your guidance, so we haven't really seen any change from your position in the beginning of the year. I wanted to understand what kind of risk you see, so downside risk to those guidance and upside risk as well. Then within the guidance, trying to understand how we should be looking at H2 loan growth. One, sectors as well, where we should see loan growth in H2. Then on your NIM expectations, seeing that your guidance is for a decline compared to where you are right now. I just wanted to get your thoughts on interest rates and outlook on that. I think finally, around asset quality, wanted to have a view on current size of the structured loans, and then if you can also share the terms of the structure as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Muyiwa. I'm going to, again, I try to, please forgive me. Sometimes I'll spend a bit more time answering questions just because someone else might want the same, might have the same thing, so I'll expand a bit. On holdco structure, the arrangements for holdco going very well. As you know, it's a financial holding company, which means you need regulatory approvals, which means you need central bank, you need SEC, and you need regulatory approval from all the places that we currently do business. I'll spend some time on it. I think in terms of the work we're doing, the operational model for holdco is pretty much set. You will have a center, which will be the controlling holding company center, and you'll have a couple of business units. Operationally, what you will see is in terms of holdco, is that we're going to do a one-for-one exchange, which means that the shares of Guaranty Trust will move up to the holdco. In terms of the bank operationally, we're going to split it into three. You will have Guaranty Trust Bank Nigeria, you'll have Guaranty Trust Bank East Africa, almost operating as a region, and you'll have Guaranty Trust West Africa operating as a region. We will then have other business units. The business units we're looking at to start off will be asset management, a PFA, and a payments company. Hopefully, this week we'll put in our final application for final approval for the payments company. For the asset management and PFAs, we're going through a due diligence as we speak on an entity, and if we close, then those pieces will be together. Our belief is that we'll be ready to go live, hopefully, with holdco by first quarter of next year. Things are going well. Like I said, we are putting in, we've got all the advisors working. We're working the operating models, and we hope to go live first quarter 2021. In terms of guidances, we never change our guidances as we go through the year. As you will see, some of them we've actually exceeded at half year, but we're not going to change them. In terms of loan growth, we'll still go for our loan growth. We're 8% up now. Guidance is 13%. If you look at our NIM at half year was 9.7. We've given you a guidance of 8, which means we've built in a possible drop in the fourth quarter, not before that. If you look at what is happening to interest rates and you're looking at what's happening to your yield on your fixed income portfolio, at half year we went down from about 15.6 to 13.4. As our bills mature, we think we will face some NIM pressure in the fourth quarter, not necessarily in the third quarter. Third quarter will be about what you see now. But in the fourth quarter, we think yield fixed income will come down, so that yield will come down. So we might see some pressure, but we don't think we'll go below the 8%, which we have as a guidance. So we're still looking to do the 13%. We've exceeded deposits. NIM guidance was 8%. We're 9.7. So it's going well. In terms of asset quality, we can talk a bit about asset quality. We NPLs at about 6.8. I'm sure someone will ask me some more detailed questions. We've restructured about 20% of our loan book at a half year. 5% of that was for public sector loans, which we all had to do as a banking industry. So we restructured our entire public sector book. It was 5%. The only other thing we restructured was about 15%. We're very comfortable with the restructures we've done. We have a coverage ratio of about 118%. The type of restructures we did were in accordance with what CMN advised, which means that we didn't give anybody more than a moratorium of 1 year. So you will find that most of our repayments will start in April. So when we look at our loan book, and my belief about what you're going to see on people's loan books, and like I said, I will expand a bit and I'm happy to answer more, is that the decisions people made over the last 3 to 5 years, you will see in their loan books. If you had a lot of trade loans, offshore trade loans, then I think you have some stress in your loan book, because as those things mature, you will see some stress. I think we've been very conservative in terms of our trade book. Our oil and gas book is okay. I'll shed some more light if people want to know. So we haven't done a restructure outside of what CBN wanted, and we've restructured 20% of the loan book. So I think we're pretty comfortable with the quality and the way the loan book is. I don't know, Mula, if I've answered your questions.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Tunde Adutoye of FPN Quest. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Tunde Adutoye. I have a couple of questions, and the first one is on your non-interest income. So if we strip out the revaluation gains of around 22 billion in each one, the non-interest income line would have been very soft. So how should we be thinking about this line going forward? Secondly, I know it's still early days, but in terms of your dividend outlook, what do you see yourselves doing? Are you maintaining your similar dividend policy, or will you be cutting dividend just to conserve cash for your capital buffers? Then I know you said you maintained all your good guidance, but when I look at the deposit growth guidance, it's still at 12%, and you've exceeded that already. Are you looking at shedding some expensive deposits before the end of the year? I'd just like to get the thinking around that. Then on your restricted deposits with the CBN, it doubled to about 888 billion. Can you tell us what your effective CRR is at this time? then can you give us an indication of the devaluation impact on your loan book in percentage terms? And yeah, you mentioned that you granted some interest rate reduction.
Can you just wait? Hey, wait. Can I please take what you have? You have so many questions. Let me take up to CRR, then I'll take the rest, okay? Because if there's too many, then I lose track. Okay, in terms of net interest income, okay, in terms, now, once I finish answering this, I'll take the other questions. In terms of net non-interest income, of course, we're down 2%. If you look at the banking sector, what are the non-interest income lines basically that we all make money off? If you take a lot of it is activity-based. So in terms of credit fees, we're down about 48% because we really are not booking a lot of loans. In terms of e-business income, we're down 32%. In terms of corporate finance fees, we're down like 68%. So yes, you're right. And it's all activity-based, and I don't think it's really unique to us. But what we have seen in the third quarter is a pickup in activities. So you'll see that account maintenance has actually gone down. So account maintenance, which is an indication of the amount of velocity and volumes going through your system, is up. We will see if we can make up some of the others. Even in terms of e-business income, volumes are up. It's just bankers' tariff that has muted some of the increase. USSD is up 34%. Mobile banking is up about 58%. So what we're going to try to do, or what we're battling to do basically, is just make sure that the increase in volumes more than outweighs what the banker's tariff has done, where really for transfers under 5,000, you're only allowed to charge 10 naira, which is about 50% of your USSD. So yes, I think we will try to at least close up the other lines as activities have picked up in the second quarter. Dividend policy, there'll be no change in dividend policy. I mean, we've paid the 30 kobo, which is what we do at half year. And by the time we get to the end of the year, we hope we'll pay our 55 to 60%. As I mentioned earlier on, in terms of guidances, we don't change our guidances midway, not where we're up or where we're down. We continue to drive the business. So just because we're above the guidance on deposits, we're not going to come back and change. We have a policy of trying not to change because it's the easiest thing to do when you're then down to try to bring it down. So we chase all our guidances to the end of the year, and we try to deliver what we promised. CRR, as you know, CRR is not up to us. CRR rate is 47% as of half year of total deposits. We grew 499 billion. So that really wasn't up to us. So our percentage of deposits in CRR today as of half year was 47%. So yes, can I now, I'll take the other questions now that you had.
Okay. I just wanted to get a sense of the magnitude of interest rate reduction that you granted to those you gave some forbearance on loans to individuals.
Well, essentially what we have done is we went a high interest rate. We were at about 16%. So when we give you a forbearance, we're not necessarily looking at an interest rate reduction. We're looking at a moratorium on the interest and the principal. And so we haven't deliberately in our forbearances gone out to reduce interest rates. No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We think where our interest rates were even before the pandemic was pretty low, where our quick credit was 15%, so we didn't really feel a need to come much further lower than that.
Okay, I see. Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from Adesoji Solanki of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Shagun. Thanks for the call. Good to see how you guys survived Q2. Okay, so I have a few, more like five questions. So the first one is, can you just talk about how did your customers' cash flows fare in Q2? And are you noticing any signs of improvement? So if so, which areas are you seeing that are recovering fastest, and which do you think will take longer to recover? The second question is still asset quality related. So this one, I'm trying to find out, how do you think about the adequacy of provisions for your stage two, despite some of the loans they haven't been restructured a couple of times already? And I guess, you know, what's the risk that we see some of these loans falling into stage three? The third question is, for the holdco, as you form the holdco, it's good to get the color you've shared, but do you have any updates for this call around how you're thinking about leadership for the Nigeria business, given how you've structured, you know, under the holdco? So let me ask those three for now, then I'll ask the final two.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Sanjay. Cash flows. You know, what we started to see, which was very helpful, was in quarter two, especially during the lockdown, a lot of the retail loans where customers stopped paying, a lot of companies weren't paying, they cut salaries by as much as 80%. So we started to see the cash flow obviously improve for retail loans. Also, in quarter two, for oil and gas, as you know, people sold oil for as low as $9. So that cash flow, so I would say the three areas where cash flow has looked good is telecoms, general retail, SMEs are coming back, they're starting to open, whether a lot of it, like the restaurants, have started to open, even people in fashion houses, hairdressers, so the SMEs are coming back up, oil and gas is coming back up. I won't say we've seen any significant increase in cash flows as far as manufacturing. So if I had to pick the sectors, I'll say oil and gas, telecoms, and retail. Let me spend some time on the stage two loans. Our total amount of stage two loans is actually 283 billion. Four customers account for 91% of them, which is ITO, WEMCO, QNOC, and Stallion. Stallion, we have actually resolved. We've done an in-court settlement. But even before we did that, they had for 7 months met their restructure. So if anything, Stallion is going to stage one and not to stage three, which is about 14 billion. Then you have WEMCO, which is a syndication. It seems to be working. It's about 60-odd billion. As that restructure continues to work, and we are looking at doing some, we're selling some assets which will deleverage the loan. There are like two assets we're looking to sell. One's a hotel, one's an office block in Hong Kong. If you sell that, you will actually deleverage the loan. So I don't expect WEMCO to move towards stage three. If anything, we'll either stay stage two or start to approach stage one. QNOC is stage two. I don't expect it to move to stage three because right now, apart from other cash flows, you have the dividends from MTN and Access Bank to continue to service that, and you have the core security, so I don't expect it to go. ITO, we're all working on doing a restructure, which I hope will finish. Once we finish that restructure, I don't expect it to move to stage three. I expect it to stay in stage two for maybe 180 days to 1 year. So when I look at the fact that 91% of it is four loans and one has actually moved already to stage one, then I don't expect to see further deterioration from stage two to stage three. Now, in terms of holdco, I mean, I spent some time on holdco, but I really am excited about holdco. I think everything that happened in the pandemic has proven that we are on the right path. I think you will see that we're gearing up the business for another high-growth phase. Not only are we taking the banking business and operationally splitting it into three, where we can look at Nigeria very differently from East Africa and from West Africa, where people can drill down, and we can do that. We think if you look at what we're doing in the payments business, Soji, you always tease me that are we number one in NIP inflow or outflow? We're actually number one in both inflow and outflow at the moment, and we have been for a few weeks, which means we control over 18% of outflows and almost 17% of inflows. When we take that business, we think the payments business is something that's going to do well. With PFAs, we think we're strategically positioned, especially once people right now are going to be able to move their pension accounts around. We think we can only gain market share from where we're going to start. And we'll have the asset management business, which will basically complement our personal banking business for people who are looking for a high yield. We will obviously focus on Nigeria, but none of these businesses are Nigeria-focused. Payments is going to have an Africa focus. Obviously, we have the other regions, and then maybe PFA and asset management will be the only ones that are Nigeria-focused. So I think the way I feel is where we were in about 2011 when we decided the retail and SMEs would be big for us. I think we're very, very well positioned to handle the next couple of years, and that this will put us in a position where we'll diversify our earnings base quite significantly and de-emphasize the reliance on the income from the bank in Nigeria.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for the caller. I think for the banking business for Nigeria, I think I was just trying to get if you have any updates for this call on succession. Is there anything you can say on that? Then the other two questions are just very quick.
Okay.
Succession. Yeah, let me start the final question.
Sure. Do you have another question about succession?
Yeah. Just two final questions. The first one is on non-interest revenues, specifically on fee and commission income. Are you seeing any sort of recovery back to Q1 levels, or how far away are we still from Q1? Then for the retail book, the NPLs there have increased quite significantly. Can you just talk through, the evolutions there? I know you said it was a bit affected by layoffs, etc. What's happening with the retail book? Thanks.
Okay. Let me start with succession. I gave some color around what we're going to do operationally with the bank. So what we're looking for now is a managing director for Guaranty Trust Bank Nigeria. The process has started. As I always told people, we had 5 executive directors, and so all of them are going through a process at the moment. We are working with a consulting firm in the UK where we're looking for, based upon what we see for the Nigeria business, what we think the future will hold, our color, and what we think Nigerian banking industry will look like. We will then, at the end of this process, which will end at the beginning of the fourth quarter, have a managing director for GT Bank Nigeria. So we're on track, just like we've always said. We have 5 executive directors who are going through the process, and one will emerge before the end of the fourth quarter. So succession for GT Bank Nigeria, I think, is well under control. In terms of non-interest revenue, we have started to see some pickup in volumes. Our volumes are going back to almost like Q1, so life is becoming a bit more normal. Obviously, we are being a bit more careful about how we're growing the loan book so that we don't fall into it. Retail NPLs went up to about 11-12%, but they started to correct for 2 reasons. Just like I said, salaries have been paid. And I also believe that the fact that the Global Standing Instruction Facility has been switched on has also made people a little bit more careful about diverting salaries or cash flows when you have loans in another place. We've actually had some money sent to us on the GSI for people who had moved their salaries to other banks. So I think between the fact that life is becoming back to normal, where people are being paid salaries again and businesses are opening up, and the GSI, that the quality of the retail loan book is getting much better. And even we have started to now, again, we had restricted and made the conditions for a lot of our STB facilities a bit more stringent, but we started to relax them now with more normality.
Okay. Well, this is fantastic. Thank you for the call, Shogun. Charles.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Ronald Gadia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, Shagun, for taking the time and taking my questions. My first question is really just a follow-up on a couple of previous callers on fee income. You've talked about the trends and why it's dropping so much. But my question is, if I compare your fee income to your peers, it is substantially lower. And this is not just for this year, but you can go back a couple of years. So if you could just talk about why GTB's fee income is substantially lower than peers and what steps you're taking, if any, to narrow the gap. The second question, again, more or less follow-ups regarding your asset quality. You said you might talk through about your oil and gas loans, so maybe you could just provide a bit more granular detail on that. Specifically, if you could talk about the midstream book, because I think that is what is significantly different this time around compared to, let's say, 2015, 2016. And also within NPLs, the one thing I noticed putting together from your presentation is that the NPL ratio in the manufacturing sector seems quite low. By my estimates, it's about 2%. You already mentioned, you know, the manufacturing sector, the cash flows came under a lot of pressure last quarter. They haven't really recovered. So if you could just talk about, you know, why that book has remained significantly resilient. And just a final one, again, on asset quality. This one's a bit more technical, but if I look at what page 139 of the financials that you've provided, where you've given the macroeconomic assumptions used to estimate your ECL provisions. If I'm reading that correctly, it does seem like the bank is making pretty optimistic assumptions about GDP growth and FX rate and whatnot. So if you could just talk about those assumptions and the possibility that they could be downgraded through the rest of the year. Thank you.
Okay, let me try. The first one's always a difficult question for me because I try not to, at least on calls, compare myself to my peers. In terms of fee income, what we can give you is what we earn. We drive our volumes, like I said to you earlier on, in terms of retail and pushing volumes, we're number one. Our corporate business is like 70 to 75% of our business. So maybe that's why we can't charge a lot of credit-related fees, because if your corporate business, your corporates don't really pay, they don't really pay credit fees. They pay minimum LC fees. They pay no account maintenance charges. So maybe the reason is the mix of our business. 70% of our business, as you've seen, 75% of the loan book is high-end. So that's where they pay the least fees. So that's the only reason, and I'm not saying it's a science that I can think of, but in terms of retail, I don't believe anybody would be doing better than us. We really don't have a middle market business. You can see 7% of our loan book, 10% of our deposits. So when you look at the middle market business where maybe you can charge a lot of fees, we're not big there. So I would say if I had to guess hazard an answer, you'd have to look at the structure of the business we do. And a high-end business is not where you're able to charge a lot of fees. In terms of oil and gas, our midstream is now 15.5% of loan book. It's a pretty safe loan book, quite honestly. In there, we have a company that does pipelines, and the payments are obviously tied to upstream evacuation. We don't have a lot of vessel financing there, which is the part which is a bit tricky today, where a lot of the upstream companies have actually decommissioned vessels. So we don't have a lot of vessel financing. What we have there is logistic bases and pipeline and people who do pipelines. And those are not really affected because logistic bases throughput, pipeline is throughput, logistic bases are still being used. The place I would have been worried is if most of our midstream was vessel financing, and it really isn't, so it's pretty okay. In terms of NPLs, maybe the reason is low is just what I just said. I mean, in terms of that loan book, 75% is high-end. And even if your high-end names are going to get into trouble, it doesn't happen immediately because, one, they have refinancing capacity. Two, they're able to restructure very quickly. So maybe if anything's going to happen to the manufacturing loan book, it would still be maybe not this quickly. The pandemic was only one quarter. So I don't think for your big names you would see a problem that quickly, especially if you're talking high-end corporates. You're not going to see the weakness in their loan books as quickly. In terms of the GDP exchange rate, I mean, we can always look at it, but it's always debatable. So far, everybody said we would be at 500, but we're at 386. So if we're talking exchange rate, are we optimistic? Are we not optimistic? We're guided by what we see. GDP growth, I might agree with you. I mean, we see minus 6.9, so we'll see whether that, we'll see what third quarter GDP growth looks like, and then we can talk about that. But I think on exchange rate for this year, we're pretty safe territory. And even if it's going to affect our provisioning, I don't think it will significantly.
Okay, understood. And just one final one from my end. If I look at your balance sheet growth, you've talked about quite a bit about, the growth, how it's better than expected. I suppose a lot of that growth, especially from the liability side, is coming from PFA deposits maturing from OMOs and finding its way into the banking sector. So could you just talk about the evolution of that going forward, going forward as yields maybe start to stabilize and pick up? Do you see these deposits leaving the system? And if that is the case, how does that play out, given that a substantial part of your deposits are being held as CRR by the CBN?
Okay, well, let me not call them PFA deposits. I think they were deposits that people had invested in treasury bills. And since, because we don't really bank a lot of PFAs, because PFAs look for a lot of high yield, we do a lot of individuals who own treasury bills. So yes, there's been significant growth in our savings. I mean, our savings is about 900 billion. I don't think that T-bill rates are going up anytime soon. And they're still not allowed to, people are still not allowed to invest in OMO bills. So I think we can still see that. We have 16.9% growth at half year in the deposits. We are only constrained, I believe, at this point. Our deposits can grow much faster, but we have to make sure we have the loans to put it into. So I'm not worried about deposit growth. I think our focus for now is to make sure that if we're growing the loan book, we're growing quality loans, so that will allow us to take on more deposits. But in terms of what will happen to our deposits, liquidity ratio is 43%. So even what is being taken as CRR, we're able to control. And we're not on any massive deposit growth, because if we cannot find quality loans, we won't grow deposits just for the sake of it.
Okay. And just a quick one. On that, what is the window? I mean, as an outsider, it seems like every time any bank or, GTB specifically grows a deposit base, it's a bit more liquid, gets hit by a pretty significant CRR. So does central bank give you enough time to deploy that liquidity, or immediately to see any liquidity, you get swiped?
Okay, well,
How difficult is
the central
that?
bank has to. Well, no, as you grow the deposits, you pay the CRR, but the central bank also. So you have to be cautious about how you grow your deposits. You don't just go on a deposits binge if you really don't have the assets. But the other thing the central bank has always said is that if you then have quality risk assets that you want to book, and you're constrained by liquidity because of CRR, you can always make an application to have some of your CRR released to fund the risk assets.
And you've been getting refunds from the CBN?
If we have, we got a bit. We haven't really been in a position where we've needed it that aggressively, because as you can see, our loan book only grew 8%. But yes, we have been given some back, yes, in the past.
The next question is from Landre Buluro of CHD. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Hi, Segun. I'm sorry if you've addressed this earlier. I joined a little bit late. Just a little update on the HoldCo, where you are, if CBN has granted any of your applications. And then there's been two or three trades on the pension side, and we haven't seen you come out at the end of it. So I'm just curious to know, strategy-wise, around the pension space. I caught the conversations around payments, and you say number one in the payment space. Where does that revenue sit in your fee income business? Because I'm trying to, see where that number, resides in on the P&L. Given, the earlier conversation about other peers, on the fee income side, on the e-channel business, the numbers are quite, to surpass what you're doing. And then finally, you know, post the lockdown, or as we're easing, you know, the lockdown period, we saw customers, just, you know, a lot of them outside the branches. I know some branches were closed, and, you know, given this whole talk around digital, people are going into other channels. Why is it a case where we're still seeing, you know, foot traffic in branches, you know, and how do you see that evolving over time? Thank you.
Okay. I can't spend too much time on Holdco because I already spent a huge amount of time on it, and it'd be unfair to those who dialed in early. Just like I told people, I've given a lot of the details. Holdco is progressing well. We're going for our regulatory approvals are going well. You haven't seen us in the PFA acquisition space because we didn't like a lot of those valuations, but as we're speaking now, we're doing due diligence on a company that has a PFA and has an asset management license, and we believe we'll close that. A lot of the income for transfers, your payment income is in e-business and it's in transfers, and the information I gave you is very easy to verify. All you have to do is call NIBS and get what the NIP outflow and inflow percentages are. I think last week on outflow were 18.6%, which was the number one, and on inflows were 16.9%, which was number one. So you can always verify those figures through NIBS. In terms of branches, I think there's been enough of an uptake. But you can imagine the numbers you're dealing with are not small numbers. So you're trying to convert a lot of people in a very short space of time. Most, I think we have almost like 40 million or over 40 million people in the banking industry today. So if you look at our mobile banking, we've actually grown 58% in the first half of the year, and USSD has grown 38%. So even though it's growing, you still have some time. Also, people still, even those who use those channels come into the branches for different things. They say they have dispense errors. They're trying to change their pins. So what we're trying to do is find out what is bringing people into the branches and changing it. Also, before the pandemic, before the lockdown, a lot of people didn't believe in those channels. But since the lockdown, a lot more people have. So a lot of people were coming in to get signed up, do different things, learn how to do it, which is why you'll see that those queues have disappeared now as people have become more normal and have learned how to use those channels. So I think these are channels that are growing very aggressively. You can see what the volumes are. I mean, USSD half year, we've done about 360-odd million transactions. Mobile banking, about 95 million transactions. So I think you will continue to see for a while the two things happening, because we still need to onboard a lot of customers. You probably still have easily 30 million customers to bring into the banking sector. So while we're doing that, you will still see some queues as people are migrating. But ultimately, I think most people are going to do their banking on their phones anyway.
Right. Just one quick last one to follow up to your retort. Any sense what the size of AUMs you're looking at?
I have a non-disclosure, so I can't really answer that question directly, but we are looking at an AUM and PFA at the moment.
All right, that's fair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Wale Okunrimboye of Signa Pensions. Please go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is, so on the whole core structure, I would just like to understand where will GTB UK sit within the whole core structure? Second question is on the FX liquidity situation in general. I just need commentary on what do you think, what maybe just color on what the state is and how long do you think we'll stay in this scenario where the banks have generally had to reduce monthly maximums that people can use on for dollars. What's your outlook generally for the FX market? Thirdly, I'm sorry to take you back to your fees. I noticed that your e-business income has been low, or rather your fee lines generally has been lower. And as you said earlier, USSD volumes are up, quite a number of volume indicators are up, but what you're seeing is that not just in H1, but I think just through the quarters, you're seeing a general slowdown on your fee income. Is there something structural, or do you think it's just all linked to COVID, and once as activity picks up, you'll see an improvement on that front? Then lastly, on interest rates, I caught you saying that you think interest rates are going to stay lower for longer. What do you think this does to banks, broader industry competition within the banking space? That would be all from me.
Okay, sorry. And if I don't answer anyone correctly, please remind me. Sorry, I made a mistake when I talked about Holdco. GT Bank UK will also stand operation on its own, just the way. So you'll have GT Bank Nigeria, you'll have East Africa, you'll have West Africa, and you'll have UK. So it'll stand operation as a BU on its own. In terms of FX liquidity, let me try to clarify some things about FX liquidity. When you look at what I consider, and these are my own views and my own view of it, when you look at what you call correspondent banking type obligations, the central bank, in terms of forwards they have sold to the banking industry, are current as of August 31st, which means that liquidity is there. Now, when you talk about specifically MasterCard, MasterCard is down to how much inflow we get from outside. And if we're not getting a lot of inflow from outside, then we can't keep opening up obligations, which is why we have dropped our card limits. Once the inflows from outside start coming, which we use to settle MasterCard obligations, then we'll take them up. So part of the problem is not only a Nigerian problem. I think COVID in itself has limited the amount of inflows into most countries and economic activity. So I'll say that the liquidity for that sort of business will be tied to the recovery of the world in general. In terms of transfer, USSD, yes, USSD volumes are up. But like I mentioned earlier on, for transfers under 5,000 and under, the transfer commission was capped at 10 naira, I think, in December, and about 50% of the transfers are that amount. So what you're seeing is that what is growing is really where there's the least money. So where last year we were making a lot of money on the 50%, this year we're barely making any money on 50% of USSD transfers. So it's not structural, it's the new banker's tariff. It's the bank's tariff on USSD transfers that has affected that. And I think we lose, let me not give the figure, but we lose quite a bit of money every month as a result of that. In terms of interest rates, yeah, I believe interest rates are still going to stay down. I don't think you're going to see a high interest rate environment at all, not in the near future. You can see where bills are. You can see savings is now at 1.75. So where, yes, it will affect our NIMs. And we're just going to have to learn to deal with it. I'm not sure there's much more we can do for cost of funds. We've gone down from 2.3 to 1.5. So we're going to have to learn to live in a lower interest rate environment, maybe grow volumes to compensate for what we will lose in the NIMs.
Okay, I think that will be all. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Timothy Wambu of EBSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, Segun. Thank you for the presentation and thank you for taking questions. Just a few questions on your non-funded income. Just curious to see, you know, from my analysis, I'm seeing that your bond trading income was actually weak. So your fixed income trading, your bond trading income was relatively weak.
Okay.
And I just wanted to understand, did you miss a trick given how low yields have gone? Are you here to do any revaluations on your bond trading book? You know, just to understand why you underperformed your peers. My other question is to do with your NPL and cost of risk guidance. Just to get a sense, what can one attribute your guidance to regulatory forbearance? And why I ask that is because, you know, you're looking at the macro outlook. You're looking at, you know, at the effects of the pandemic, obviously, and the decline in oil prices and the FX constraints. And yet, you know, your guidance is better than what it was probably even. I mean, it's better than what you've seen in other markets. So I just want to understand, does that play, has that influenced your guidance, your full year guidance? And then just lastly, maybe just speak about lastly, I know you mentioned it, but just speak about the state of the Nigerian consumer. I can see your NPLs for individuals are up quite significantly. But I'm trying to understand, how does that not affect general commerce? Thank you.
Okay. Please, if I don't answer the questions well enough, please just tell me and I'll come back and try and give a bit more color. In terms of our fixed income trading, obviously it was a bit slow, but no, we generally don't revalue our portfolio the way a lot of people do, and I'll tell you why. It's for our own selfish reasons. What we see are declining yields in fixed income. So if we revalue them today, we take the profit today and affect the NIMs going forward. So you will find that we tend to hold a lot of our bills to maturity, and we try to trend them and see what will happen later. Once we've taken the revaluation, then we're going to hit the NIMs going forward. So we tend to hold those and let them play out. So even though, yes, there wasn't a lot of fixed income trading, we generally don't revalue our T-bill portfolio. In terms of NPLs and cost of risk, I've heard everybody, yes, there's been some CBN forbearance, which has helped a little bit. But I don't think that's why our own loan book is the way it is in terms of the risk around it. I think that if you look at the makeup of our loan book, 74% of it is very high end. And so it's not going to be the first to show a lot of, it's not going to be the first to show a lot of problems. If you're going to see problems, it tends to happen in the middle market, is what we call commercial banking, which is only 7% of our loan book. So I think part of what you see in terms of our cost of risk and our NPLs is just where we pitched our loan book over the last couple of years. Retail, which we went into, which is 10% of our loan book, we did see the spike because a lot of businesses shut down. They weren't paying salaries. They cut salaries by as much as 80%. But that has started to change a bit, and people have started from about June. A lot of businesses are opening up, SMEs are opening up. So we started to see that loan book, and I'm sure as you get to the end of the third quarter and end of the fourth quarter, you see that the retail book would have shown some recovery from an NPL perspective. Is consumer purchasing power still weak? I believe so. I'm not sure we've come back to where consumer purchasing power is very strong, but that's not just a Nigerian problem, is it? I think with what has happened with the pandemic the world over, consumer purchasing power is weak, and a lot of what is keeping it afloat are the palliatives where a lot of money is just being printed and handed out to people. And that if you stop that, you would also see how even in developed markets, the consumer purchasing power has weakened. And for as long as you're not printing a lot of money and handing it out, it's the reality of what COVID has done to the world. Yes.
Thank you. So on the individuals, so, I mean, clearly you've mentioned job losses or let's say salaries not being remitted. That would also mean that the underlying businesses are also affected. Yet when I look at your NPL, you know, change year on year, I mean, it's really only individuals where we've seen the spike in NPLs. How about the underlying businesses? You know, because I'm looking at, for instance, general commerce and then wondering, you know, I mean, that's where one will also expect to see a lot of, let's say, NPL formation or bad loans beginning to form. And I'd imagine partly due to the restrictions that were in place, the effects, challenges here and there. Yeah, maybe just a bit on that.
Yeah, but if you look, general commerce, you have to look at the makeup of the book of the bank. General commerce is not a big line for us. Where you see a lot of general commerce in banking is in commercial banking, which is 7% of our loan book. So we're not a big general commerce bank. It's 3.2% of our loan book. So yes, you're right. But that's why I say you must always look at the makeup of a bank's loan book. If General Commerce is 3.2%, yes, even if it's weak, we're not going to catch a cold very quickly.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Our next question is Ahmed Zuhaiter of SPG Securities. Please go ahead.
How much sort of assets are you looking to deploy across geographies and business segments? And within banks, within the three segmented banks, sort of what is your proportional allocation towards retail banking? I noticed since 2011, the amount of assets allocated to retail banking rose from 8% to roughly 20% now in 2019. Do you expect that to continue to grow at the expense of commercial and corporate banking? And can you talk a bit about that in the nuance of geographies, how much in East Africa, West Africa, and Nigeria? Thanks.
Okay. Obviously, a lot of our loan book is high-end. And if you look at it, it's 75% today. I think the journey we've started in Nigeria, just like you rightly picked up, is we're trying to diversify that loan book more towards SMEs and commercial. So what we would like when we stabilize and continue this journey is for our corporate loans to be about 50 to 55% of the total loan book, and SMEs, public sector, commercial bank, and retail to be around 45%. We think this will give us a lot more diversification in the loan book. And this is what we would like to replicate around the regions, because I think what we've done as we've gone into all the regions is we've played what we know well, which is to go and book loans in, whether it's a high-end commercial, where our balance sheet doesn't let us into retail, into corporate yet, or into corporate where the balance sheet is big enough as it is in Ghana. But there is a deliberate attempt to start to reduce the reliance on the corporate business, diversify the loan book. And I would say that the day we start to see like 55 corporate and the rest 45, retail around 15 to 20, SME around 5 to 10, and the rest public sector and commercial, that's kind of the journey we would like to embark on.
Great. And just in line with that, your ROAs, obviously with a very sort of a loan-dominated asset mix, have let's call it 5 to 6%. What do ROAs look like in the next sort of 5 to 10 years as you diversify into more fee-generating businesses like payments and pensions?
Well, I think I wish I had the right answer to that, but I think we would like it to be at about 5, no matter what we go into, because then that tells us that we're at least working the assets we booked efficiently. We're slightly down at 4.6 a half year, which is not, doesn't make us very happy. We think that it's only at about 5% we started to efficiently work our assets. So I'll say about 5.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Muyiwa Oni of SPG Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just had a few follow-up questions. So the first is on your cost-to-income ratio. Just looking at where you are right now in terms of guidance, and just want to understand what kind of cost line that you see scope for improvement. So where, what kind of levers do you plan to do on that? And then on your customers, not for customers, there's been a considerable increase.
You're a bit muted. I got the first question, cost to income improvements, but I didn't hear the second one. Sorry.
Okay, so can you hear me now?
Yes, better.
Is the line better?
Yes, it's so a little better.
So on your number of customers, it's gone up reasonably, so about 700,000 in 6 months, up to 19 million customers, 19.2 million customers currently. So can I get a sense of dormancy rate for your total customer figure?
and then try to understand what makes a customer an active customer, so in terms of number of activities being done. And then also, I know you talked about adoption of some of your channels. Just wanted to understand how to drive that as well, particularly when you see that on your total number of cards, there hasn't really been any shift in the past 6 months. So how do you plan to increase that card utilization? So I think it's about 5 million versus the 19.2 million customers.
Okay. Let me talk to you about the first one. Cost to income is 43% at half year. OPEX is up about 19.2%. If you look at what made that up, it was Amcon, NDIC, and then we had some depreciation charges. The way we run our Amcon charge, and I hope that's how, I don't know whether that's how all banks do, we take the entire year's accrual in 6 months, which means in the second half of the year you won't see that, so the expenses will come down. We're also looking at NDIC. Obviously, NDIC premium grew with the increase in deposits. There's very little we can do about that. In terms of our depreciation and everything, we're going to try to work that a bit. And I think that you will find that we will come, we will be within our guidance of 40% by the time the year ends. There were some expenses which came in the first half of the year, which won't be in the second half of the year. So that should take us, we should be at our 40%, if not lower, by end of the year. In terms of customers and dormancy, about 40% of our customer base is dormant. We're actually growing a bit more than 700,000 in 6 months. We're actually growing about 300,000 a month, apart from the month of April, where we're in lockdown. E-business, obviously, I don't want to say much, so much, but we have a plan for how we're going to activate our dormant accounts and get the cards into the hands of people. A lot of the people who are dormant are kind of bottom of the pyramid and need people close to them. So you can use different ways. You can use an agent network. We have some of that. You can use other people's. But we will definitely be going outside of the traditional branching network to get the cards into people's hands and to reduce the dormancy. And the way we know whether an account is active is you would have done a transaction, I think, in the last 3 months. If you haven't done anything 3 months, then we push you to dormant.
Okay, thank you very much for that. If I may ask just one last question on your payment / fintech business. Just wanted to understand how GTB is thinking about this more from a profitability driver perspective. Just more because if it's a number of payments business, volume seems to be the focus and not necessarily profitability per se.
Well, when we get in there, we've never done anything just for volume. We've always done it for profit and to maximize value. So I think we will have a different approach to how we will run our payments business, but you can be sure that whatever payments business we set up, it will be also profit-driven. Of course, we will always look for volume. We will have a leaner startup, and we have things to leverage on day one. So we're not going to be starting like a fintech that had no customers and no volume. So, you know, we're going to be lucky enough to leverage some of the hard work we've done as a bank.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Very helpful.
Thank you. The next question is from Randolph Westhuizen of Old Mutual Investment Group. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for the call and all the very detailed feedback. So perhaps just some few bits and bobs. I'm just curious on the PSB initiative by the CBN. I see that they sent out an updated guidelines a week or so ago. How do you see that evolving, or what is your understanding of the current state of affairs? And have you been doing anything in particular to position against that?
Okay, I mean, it's very interesting, obviously. If you look at what it is, they will be allowed to basically take deposits. They won't be allowed to do any lending. They would have to hold 75% of those in government securities. They can keep 25% in banks. They will have to operate like banks. They'll have CRR. They have to render returns. So you might find two models, I would think. You might find a model where telco decides to partner with a bank, so they know how to do that. You might have a model where telco decides to go it alone, which means, obviously, like we've always known, their competition for the banks. The very good thing about the holdco structure that we are going into, I'm sure if you read the guidelines, if we choose to go head-to-head with the PSBs, financial holding companies are allowed to apply for PSB licenses. So again, I think we will have created the vehicle to compete head-on if we absolutely need to.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Odisoji Solanke of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Shekhar. I just have a few additional questions. The first one is just generally speaking, right? I mean, because it's very strange for Nigeria to be in such a low interest rate environment. And second to that, when you consider how punitive the regulatory environment is, I mean, I think last week we heard of a bank where the cash reserve was well by 100%. So I'm just thinking, when you think about the outlook for the industry overall, I don't know, over the medium term, do you see the regulatory environment easing up? And if not, are we faced with with such an environment where non-interest revenue really becomes the mainstay for revenues? With all the swaps, et cetera, contributing a lot to that mix. The second question is, for the diversification of the loan book to higher risk, you know, what I think are basically higher risk lending buckets, why is this a good idea now? And what sort of timeline are you aiming for when you say 55% corporate over, you know, what sort of timeline are you talking about? Then the final question is, your digital income. So FY19, you had 18.5 billion. What's the comparable figure for that at half year? Thanks.
Okay. Good things. I'll use the third question to get a break. Badji will give me that one. Let me do the first two. I think, honestly, you're going to be in a low interest rate environment for a while, which means NIMs are going to be under pressure. You're going to have to make it up with some scale. You will have to push non-interest revenues. I guess if you ask me, Soji, it means that the banking sector in Nigeria is becoming like a banking sector in most of the developed markets, where the NIMs we were used to traditionally will have to go away. They will narrow, and that's why you will have to kind of increase the size of the business you're doing to make up for some of what you will losing the NIMs. It's just how banking is everywhere in the world. And here we've just enjoyed a bit of a honeymoon, and maybe the honeymoon has ended. In terms of diversification, I don't necessarily agree that it's higher risk, because if you're able to spread a loan book, even if a percentage of it goes out, see, the problem with the high-end loan book is if anything goes wrong, you really catch a big cold. So if you remember what happened to us with us and Etisalat, one loan went bad and we basically lost 40 odd billion. And if I were to diversify retail loan book, even if it was 20%, I think it would take a lot for a retail loan book to lose 40 billion naira in 1 year. So the diversification doesn't mean taking on additional risk. I think the diversification will keep the risk the same, which is why we are still doing salary advances and we make sure we know your sources of income. And we will use AI a lot better than we have going forward, where hopefully the risk of default goes down. So I wouldn't necessarily say the diversification will bring greater risk, because even when you're high-end concentrated, one bad loan and one goes bad, it's a lot of money. So I think the diversification won't bring more risk, actually. I think it might actually reduce some of the risk of concentration that we have presently. I'll let Banji take that third question and tell me where that $18 billion is and what it is at half year.
Okay, thank you, Soji, and thank you, sir. When you look at our mappings are a bit different from other banks. So speaking straight to your question, from FY19, we are off 26 to 30%. We have 70% of that line, which we call discount and recovery boost under other income, principally constitutes digital banking earnings. So if you add that to what we disclose under e-business income, which under fee and commission income, you have the numbers I've just given to you. So we have 26 to 30% off from FY19. If you look at what we posted in June, we've done up to 8 billion in terms of our digital earnings. 4 billion from that, 6.927 billion under other income, partly to digital banking. So that's the way to look at our own books.
I hope that helped, Sergio.
Comparable figure is 8 billion. I said half year.
Yeah.
So it's 18
yeah.
billion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like I had explained earlier on, even though we're growing the volumes, the volumes that are growing really are under the 5,000 transfers where you're restricted to 10 naira. So really about 50% of your USSD is not making you the money was making you last year.
Okay. No, that makes sense. It's quite a common problem. Yeah, but I think, Shaggy, your initial comment around, you know, that Nigeria is sort of reverting to developed market type dynamics.
Yeah.
I mean, considering where inflation is, I mean, that also doesn't really add up, right? So which is why I guess there's a structural issue here. I'm just trying to pick your brains on why you are comfortable with the reality that like a good thing.
Well, look, I mean, I just think that you operate as much as you can within the ambit of where you find yourself. And that even with the challenges and all these headwinds, you've got to find a way to maneuver it. Yes, I agree you have a high inflation rate, but for right now, all the other policies that are being pursued, whether monetary or fiscal, have led the government or central bank to decide that we need a low monetary, a low interest rate environment. And as banks, you have to learn how to operate in those environments and hopefully, like I keep saying, and I say to people privately and publicly, the decisions you made over the last 3 to 5 years are going to be very important to how your next 3 years look. But you and I can always have a much longer conversation around this.
Yeah, sure. We'll do.
Okay.
We'll move on to the next person, which is Landre Buluro of CHD. Please go ahead.
Just a quick follow-up, Shago, on USSD and the telcos. Have you guys resolved, you know, is there any resolution to that matter? And also that income, trying to get a sense of where that income sits on your P&L.
No, I think people have made, from the perspective of the banks, and I hope I can speak for the banks, we are not ready to take on USSD charges on behalf of customers. I think we've made that quite clear, and that the only thing that works and makes sense for us as an industry is end-user billing, where you charge the customers directly, and we know that the telcos do that with betting companies, and they do it with religious organizations. So we really don't see why banks should be treated any differently.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up from Rona Gadia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a couple of quick follow-ups. Firstly, could you just comment on the tax rate? I understand the tax rate this year could be lower because the tax on dividends has been removed. And also what that could be next year once I think the tax on or the tax exempt status from fixed income securities expires. And the second question, I guess you've spent a lot of time talking about the digital business PSPs. Just the final one from me, once the holdco structure has been established, would you consider cross-listing that business in another jurisdiction or maybe bring in a strategic investor to unlock the value of that business?
Okay, I think the answer to your second question is both. I mean, I think we will look to do both, and we might look to bring in strategic investors. Like I said, when we look at the holdco business, we think about GT Bank Nigeria, probably asset management, PFA as having a Nigerian focus. We look at every other thing we go into, payments, as having an Africa focus. So, yes, we would be looking at doing business, payments business, just not in Nigeria. And if what that requires at the appropriate time is a strategic partner, we're also open to that. We probably won't do that on day one, but it's not something that we would close our eyes to or our minds to. I'll let Banji handle the tax rate questions. Yeah, he does the taxes, so he's probably in a better position to answer that one.
Okay, thank you. In terms of effective tax rate, we are currently at 12.5%, and like you have alluded to, principally at the back of exempt income. When you look at our financial statement, 75% of that $22 billion is actually relating to fixed income securities, which means what will be taxed if the release fall away in 2021 is $16.5 billion. And that will take our effective tax rate up to like 17-18%. So for us, we see in a suitable position. So what you see, there'll be additional pickup of like $5 billion in terms of tax. From 12.5%, we'll be closing at 17%.
Okay, understood.
We will go on to the next question from Randolph Westhuizen at Old Mutual.
Yeah, sorry. Go on.
Randolph, go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just curious on the USSD transactions. Can you see whether people now split transactions up on purpose to get below the minimum fee threshold?
It's possible. I think that human beings are rational in how they, in their behavior. So I think really people have probably started to do their transactions under 5,000. Yes. I mean, I think it's only rational to expect that some of that has happened. Yes. And like I said, we're seeing about 50% of USSD transfers being done 5,000 and under.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering, just a suggestion from a concerned shareholder or a caring shareholder.
Like,
perhaps you can have an algorithm or something that sort of stops people if you see them, they sort of sequencing, you know, this minimum transaction three or four in a row. Say, you can't do this. We have a limit to how many you can do to the same recipient in a minute or something. I don't know, just...
Okay, we'll look at it, but you know, we always have to, what I always say to people is that in a regulated industry, you have to be sure that the regulator is on your side when you run the algorithm. It's a very good idea, but we would definitely have to carry the regulator along.
Okay. All right, that's all just a suggestion from my side.
Thank you. No, but thank you. It's very useful. We'll see if we can at least... see if the regulator will help us do that, because I'm sure there is some of that going on.
All right.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. The next question is from Dami Adesola from Africa Practice. Please go ahead.
Okay. So I was asking, I'm trying to get a sense of the management's sentiment. So on one hand, what is the general opinion about the group's H1 performance? Did the numbers meet internal expectations, taking into consideration the current issues? And then the second part of the question would be, what are the expectations going into H2? Are you optimistic about H2 performance? And where do you expect to see the strongest growth and opportunities for income? And also, where do you expect to see the lowest growth or a possible contraction in performance?
Okay. Of course, no, we're not happy. Management wasn't happy with first half of the year because we're down 5% on last year, and we're never happy when we're down. But we do understand it because we didn't have an April. But then May started to pick up, June started to pick up, and July and August and September have followed the same trajectory. So we're hoping that by the end of third year, we'll be at run rate in terms of the guidance. So happy with quarter one. We're not too happy with quarter two. We think quarter three will catch up. Where do we see? We think there's general pickup in activity. You'll see in third quarter, there'll be more retail activity. There's been more dealing room activity. The loan book. Yeah, so a lot of it is activity-based. But I think by end of third quarter, which is the end of this month, we should be at guidance run rate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up from Martin Zaccheni of Lighthouse Capital.
Hello? Hello?
Martin? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Hello?
You can go ahead with your question.
Yeah. I can hear you, but there's music as well. Yeah.
Just one moment for me, please, sir. Sorry, so that line is still giving us music in the background. We will just, ladies and gentlemen, a final reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Sir, it would appear we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments?
Thank you. No, thank you so much, everybody who came on the call. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for calling in. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes this call, and you may disconnect your lines.